I think of it like when I know people who are like, you know, really into yoga and they talk about their practice. Sometimes I wish we talked about running that way because it is, to me, like it's a practice.
The Diz Runs With podcast episode 311 starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to the Diz Runs With podcast, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So let's get started. Hey guys, before we dive into today's episode, I got a little different request than normal today. I'm not plugging anything, no sponsors for this episode, but I do have a favor to ask. Today, September the 19th, is my wife's birthday, and what she's asking of all of her friends and our families and that type of thing for her birthday is that people will donate whatever they would have, you know, gotten for her birthday, the monetary value, to the race she's running in February. She's running the Princess Marathon Weekend, the Glass Slipper Challenge, whatever it is at Disney World. And she's running it as a charity runner for the Children's Miracle Network. So what my request is today, if you would be so willing, if you can scrounge up 4 quarters or 10 dimes or 100 pennies or whatever it takes to get to a dollar, if you would, unbeknownst to her, I'm not telling her this at all. I want to see, you know, what happens and how many, you know, how long it is before she asks me what the heck's going on. But I would love if everybody that's listening to this would be willing to head over to dizruns.com/CMN for Children's Miracle Network and donate $1 to her cause for her birthday. You can do it anonymously. You can share your name. You can leave her a note, or you can just do it blindly, and she'll have no idea what the heck's going on. But that would be awesome. That would be a cool birthday gift for her, and it would mean a lot to me if it, just $1, one time, $1, no big deal. And if you can't do it, obviously not a big deal. But you know, if you have a chance, and if you listen to this at some point between now and February of 2017, because that's when the race is taking place, if you could give up a dollar for her, that'd be awesome. That'd be awesome. Just a cool thing to do since today's show is coming out on her birthday. So a little longer intro than normal, but just wanted to throw that out there. If you're willing to do it, that would be cool. Dizruns.com/CMN. And that'll take you right to her page. You just donate a dollar right there. Take just a couple minutes, PayPal, credit card, all that kind of good stuff, whatever works best for you. Thanks guys. Thanks. And with that, let's get on with today's episode of the show. Hey guys. Today, I'm running with a woman who credits running with giving her the energy to face each day, and that's a sentiment that I can definitely agree with. She has run 19 marathons with a PR of 3 hours and 11 minutes, but she isn't one of those marathoners that has always been fast. Her slowest marathon was a 5:34, so I'll be curious to find out how she has been able to chip away at her time over the course of her running career so far, so maybe I can do the same thing as well. She's also a coach and a Pilates instructor, a wife and a mom, and I'm looking forward to going a few easy miles today with Ms. Jessica Hoffheimer. Welcome to the show, Jessica.
Hi, thank you.
Definitely, definitely. And guys, if you want to check out Jessica's blog, which has been inactive for a while, but is either about to become active again or has already become active from the time that we recorded this to the time that it's released, you can check out paceofme.com. And on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, kind of pretty much all over social media, you can find her with that same handle everywhere you go. And that's just @paceofme. And I'll have the links to, you know, all those places to connect with her and anything else we talk about that makes sense in the show notes for today's episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/311. So Jessica, the way we always start off on the show is with what is designed to be a simple question. And I mean, it is a simple question. It's designed to get the conversation going, but sometimes the answer can be a little bit more complicated than, was originally intended, but it's always just a great place to start. And that's to ask, what is your favorite distance to race and why?
Yeah, I think it's like a trick question. It's a hard one because my knee-jerk reaction is just to say I love every distance, and I do in a lot of ways, but I've done everything from the 5K through the 50 miler, and I gotta settle in on the half marathon. It became like a close tie between the 10 miler and the half. Mm-hmm. But I went with the half. I get all the joy out of like that long training cycle, like really, you know, getting to get some long runs in. I like to go beyond the 13-mile distance in my training for the half, which I just really love, like running long and slow. Mm. But there's also like a lot of strategy with racing the half. So I feel like, you know, I can't go out there and just like give it my all right in the first mile or I will not do so well. Mm-hmm. And I like that, you know, I have to strategize how to execute the race. When I'm done though, I'm not like, oh my gosh, I can't run for forever because I'm so sore or, you know, I just think it's like the perfect distance. Especially now as, you know, with three kids and the amount of time that I have to train, I would probably have to, if I was told I could only train for one race distance for the rest of my life, I'd probably pick that one.
Gotcha. It's definitely a common answer. And especially for the, you know, the fact that it fits into life better and it's, you know, it doesn't beat you up as much. You can run it and still go on and have a, you know, a productive day instead of feeling like you're stuck up on the couch for the rest of the day. But I've never, I don't think, you know, if memory serves and maybe I'm wrong, but I don't think I've ever had anybody mention the strategy part of it, which, I don't know that I would have ever thought of either, but it makes perfect sense. What is, and obviously every race is going to be slightly different based on how you're feeling in the course and all that kind of good stuff.
Yeah.
But kind of what is a general strategy for the half marathon for you? What does it look like?
I kind of divide it into three parts. They're not equal thirds, but I usually, you know, if I, my last half marathon that I like all out raced, which was a while ago, but I, strategized it like this and it worked out really well for the most part. I chunk it out into like three manageable parts. And in the first couple miles, you know, it's kind of almost like a warm up for me. Mm-hmm. I feel like a caged animal. I'm holding back, you know, really trying to rein in my energy, get a sense for like how I'm feeling, what I think the day is going to bring. And, that's usually, I'm usually pretty warmed up by about mile three. Mm-hmm. And then from there up until about mile 10, like 9 or 10, I'm in a groove. Like I feel like I'm on my race pace for sure. You know, and I try to control that so that I'm not going, you know, I know going into it, like what I can expect, you know, A, B, C goals kind of thing. And I get on to my race pace by then and I lock it in. And then for the last 5K, I race it and just give it every single thing that I have. You know, my last half marathon that I did that in, I had a ton in my tank. And I usually will fuel about halfway through. So my stomach isn't getting, you know, that having to deal with processing those calories right when I'm trying to run my fastest. But I can use that energy that, you know, I've gotten from it when I'm ready to like go really hard. So I don't know, like that, those like three little parts, it's sort of like a warm up, locking it in and then racing it and giving it everything that I have.
Yeah. I feel like that's probably about what I do too, is I kind of go 5K and then, you know, 5K to start to kind of warm up and settle in, find the pace. And then the last 5K it's go with what you got left and try to you know, settle in and be steady, again, based on your goals through that middle section. So, easier said than done though. You know, that execution.
Yeah, totally. Well, even in that, half marathon that I raced it all at that's my half marathon PR. And I had to stop at like mile 12 and use the bathroom. So, you know, it was not fun. But it was like, okay, you know, it was what I'm dealing with. And so I, you know, it was still a PR. I'm super happy with how that turned out, but you know, there's always something.
Well, in that situation, you're going, well, shoot, if I could have just, you know, if I didn't have that issue, like it would have been, how much more of a PR would it have been?
Well, exactly. I lost like a solid 90 seconds with that. I mean,
plus the break of momentum. And I mean, just everything.
Yeah, completely. So, you know, I mean, you got to assess things and take care of it, whatever you're faced with. But you know, that strategy, I still think is the right one. I just am always trying to fine tune, like, you know, for me, it has really boiled down to GI stuff. And so I've really, like, that is an area I've got to figure out. And so that was sort of a turning point, that training cycle was for me, because I wound up coming out of that with two PRs, you know, both in the marathon and the half marathon, but both races involved like pretty intense GI distress. Right. So
Not anymore. If we can, you know, kind of get into that just a hair, because I know that's something that a lot of runners struggle with. Any idea what brought it about? Was it too much sugar or any idea, or still kind of trying to figure that out?
Well, so, I mean, truthfully, like when I embarked on really trying to become the best runner that I could be, these issues started popping up for me. You know, and I just kind of wound up resigning myself to, okay, well, you know, you hear about runner's trots all the time. You hear about runner. It is a common problem for endurance athletes in general, in particular runners. And I just kind of like, I think I became sort of complacent about it over, you know, a period of time. I just was like, okay, well, I've tried every single piece of nutrition product that's out there. I've tried fasted runs. I've tried, you know, timing strategically when I eat, what I eat the week before, the night before, all this stuff. Right. And it just seemed like no matter what I did, I had to deal with it. My running friends would joke with me. I called the porta potty on our running route the Emerald Palace. I feel like, oh, there it is. I have to stop. You know, like it just was part of it. I was like, okay, well, I may as well learn how to deal with it. So I got to a certain point where I just did like the best I could do was the best I could do. It's part of my story. And so I would just take care of it and move on. And I chipped away at my race PRs and, you know, really improved my running. But like, this was always part of my story. Now I'm working with Tani Prazak, who is incredibly, you know, knowledgeable with nutrition and many other things related to nutrition and endurance sports. And she has really helped me dig deep and get really real with myself and figure out like, okay, well, this does not have to be part of my story. What she is sort of suspecting, like in general, pushing ourselves to the degree that endurance athletes do, like we're going to do some internal gut damage, essentially, like that happens. It's science, it's physiology. But what happens is like, if we're also eating a lot of sugar or things that aren't nourishing to our gut, is we're essentially compromising our gut lining there. We increase permeability of our gut. So then it's just weaker. It can't really tolerate stuff that, you know, a strong gut would be able to tolerate, such as really hard training or sugar or, you know, foods that are inflaming like gluten, you know, nuts and seeds, different things that like are the typical allergens or things that are gut irritants. And like on top of that, my genes just have that. I'm predisposed to that stuff. I had asthma as a kid. One of my sons has terrible food allergies that he's had since birth. My nieces and nephews have them. My mom, like we all, like we're an allergy family. So like, I just have a sensitive system. So it's kind of like the perfect storm. Like I'm dealing with already a sensitive system. And then in addition to that, I'm pushing myself pretty, you know, pretty extreme levels. And at the time for about two decades, I ate a vegetarian diet and like what, which is awesome, but there's nothing wrong with that, except what I was doing was actually eating like a lot of my calories from high sugar stuff. You know, and like that was just, I needed a lot of calories. I didn't eat a lot of protein from like animal sources. I didn't eat any, like maybe I'd have dairy, but dairy would upset my stomach. So, you know, I needed to like overhaul this. And she is helping me basically heal my gut through nutrition and some supplementation and like pulling back from some of the intensity with my training and racing for a little while. The idea being that I'll build, her word is robust. So I'll have a really robust gut. I can handle the intensity of that training, as well as, you know, if I want to like go have a piece of cake or, you know, drink some wine, like things like that. Not that that would become like something I do all the time, but that when I would consume those things, my body would like, it'd be no problem as opposed to like, now I have an EpiPen for wheat, for example. And she actually thinks I probably won't need that anymore once we're through with this process. Yeah, I hope she's right.
Yeah, it's one of those things where I feel like, and I'm not, I'm not even not necessarily, I'm definitely not claiming to be an expert on gut health or, you know, all of the intricate science related to that. And I mean, you know, there's still a lot of research needing to be done and consistently being done. But every time I hear stuff about that, and it's just, you know, I'm thankful for you for shining the light on, you know, just how important it is. Like, it's not just what you eat the day before. It's not just what you eat during, you know, it's taking care of our guts can do, I mean, just from sickness, from health related,
yeah.
and just, you know, like you said, the having a robust, digestion system or you know, it's important, and it's something that it's easy to overlook, but man, you know, once you can address it, it makes a world of difference.
Yeah, I'm really feeling excited right now because, you know, when I think about what I was accomplishing with my running, you know, when I was essentially like not so healthy, right? Like, I mean, I was able to do pretty awesome things with my running with not the greatest diet and obviously like not the best symptoms, having like stomach pain and GI issues on my race days and even like on track, you know, go to the track for a workout, stuff like that. You know, when I think about sort of what pulling the arrow back so it can shoot farther. That's that analogy, you know, I don't know who said it, but you know, you imagine like, okay, sometimes you have to like pull the arrow back so you can shoot it forward. And that's where that phase I feel like I'm in right now, you know, well, what will I be able to accomplish with like really great health? You know, sometimes I wonder, gosh, like, you know, was all that I was doing, like, was it possible because I was pushing myself at that level, eating the way that I was, or is it really like, I wonder, like, am I really going to be able to accomplish this when I, you know, I'm through this? But everybody that I've talked to, from my running coach to Tawny to the folks over at Inside Tracker, who have really helped me understand like where I need to work to optimize my biomarkers, you know, there's just like no question that it will be a very different experience when I'm ready to race again after doing all this work. So it's cool to think about.
Yeah, definitely. And it's something that, again, it's something that I'm always like, man, like you just wonder, and it's cool to see it kind of how it'll play out for you. Has it been difficult to pull back on some of the intensity and the volume and whatnot?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, so with, basically in the last year, I've already told you about this, and I know some people have followed me on social media and stuff, but my husband took a job in North Carolina last year, and he had to move down here before my kids and I did. And so he moved down here. I ran the New York City Marathon in the fall of last year. And so that was early November. And Robert moved down here before Thanksgiving, like after the marathon and before the holidays. Leading up to New York, I'll say like last summer, I was feeling really strong. I was running faster than ever. But I started to experience like feelings where it was overtraining. Like I didn't feel like the passion for running that I live by, you know, and it just felt weird. I didn't have any injuries, nothing like that. I was running fast, but I was just like, I feel like doing this, you know? And, I talked to my coach about it. I went to see the doctor. I'm like, I don't know, like just doesn't feel right. And I know enough about like signs and symptoms of overtraining. They weren't all exhibiting in me, but like my gut, like was telling me like something's not right. So my doctor did blood work, and I didn't really know what any of this stuff meant, but my ferritin, which is your iron stores, was a 14. And my doctor said to me, well, that's on the low end of normal, which I think the number she told me was normal was anywhere from like a 7 all the way to something like 130. So it was like this huge,
it's a wide window. Yeah.
It was really wide window. And like, I just thought, God, like, well, that's, you know, pretty low, like, you know, but I guess it's within normal, so they're not panicking. They told me that I could take an iron supplement, and I wasn't eating meat at the time. But like the recommendation was, well, you might want to like start trying to have some meat in your diet, like some red meat. Right. And so I started to to fiddle with that on my own and like research like the paleo way of eating, because I had heard that that was helpful to people. And here I was like, I started becoming a vegetarian when I was 16 years old, and I'm 40 now. So, you know, this is like a huge change for me. But when I ran New York City, I was in the middle of the race, running strong, on pace. And by about mile 20, I didn't hit a wall from the standpoint of like physically. I just didn't, I like emotionally didn't want to race anymore. I saw my family and I stopped and hugged them. And I was like, in the middle of a race, I was on track for, I think, right. like 305 to 310. Like, and you're moving. Literally stopped. I was, and I don't know. It was like in my heart, like I didn't want to do it. Mm-hmm. And that was a really strange feeling for me. I crossed the finish line in the 325 and I was like, something has to change. Like I just felt like I was on the brink of like, not going to a good place with my health or my running. Like it just didn't feel right. And we were embarking on this huge family life change with we were going to relocate from place that I've lived at basically since I was born. I mean, I left for, you know, college. I left for part of high school. My dad took a job in Nashville and we left there for a little while, but you know, essentially this was home we were going to uproot. And so I wound up, like, I was already registered for Boston. And at first, the training was going to start, you know, in December, January. So I took, you know, some time off. I decided I would self-coach myself and not have the pressure, not that I was getting pressure from my coach, but that I just kind of needed to step away from that for a little while, because things just weren't feeling right. And so the training cycle started in January, and I was being a single mom in the middle of the winter working with my husband gone. And I did like maybe 3 weeks of training where I was like, all right, I'm going to like go for it. And then I was like, you know, I'm just going to run for peace and joy and health here. And so I went to Boston fully trained. I completely intentionally left my watch in Virginia. I did not want to like have any sort of time goal. I did the training. I had the fitness to run a marathon, but I just wanted to go and like completely enjoy it. Mm-hmm. And I did. It was so fun. I loved it. And I wasn't like sore at all afterward. It was totally great. But that at that point, like about a month after Boston, I got my work done with Inside Tracker. And the good news was that my ferritin had doubled since I had stepped, you know, since the fall when I had stepped away from hard training and I had started to eat meat and like educate myself on that. So I didn't take an iron supplement. I was just doing, this was all because I had pulled back on my training and started eating better. I thought once my family, we moved here in June, and I thought once I moved here and life started to like find a new rhythm that I would be ready to train hard for a fall marathon. I started working with a new coach who's awesome and working with Tani. And, you know, at the onset, I was like, gosh, you know, I feel like I've kind of taken a year off. Like I ran Boston, but I didn't race Boston. Mm-hmm. But both Tani and James McCurdy, my coach, were like, you know, let's really, you know, if you're willing to take a big picture approach here and really heal your gut and really do all the little things, you know, and get settled in your life in, you know, North Carolina and like, let's like take the long road, you know? And so I decided no fall racing. That was really hard. It was really hard because I was like so amped and ready to go. Like, okay, I'm like, you know, I feel so ready. And now though, I knew I want to run Boston in the spring. And if I did a fall marathon, it was going to have to be a late fall marathon because like we really just are now settled and it's September. So I was going to essentially start training, you know, I don't know, a couple weeks ago. It would have to be like, I had my eyes on San Antonio, which is in December. So realistically, like if I went all out for that, you know, I like recover enough to start training for Boston again. And that just isn't for me anymore these days. I'm like, I'd rather go for quality over quantity, mm-hmm. And longevity. Like, I want to be doing this when I'm like way older than I am now. I mean, for the rest of my life. So I don't know. Like, I have unfinished business with the marathon. I want to run a 3-hour marathon. I totally believe in my heart that I can do that. But it isn't gonna, you know, I'm not gonna take any shortcuts to get there. So, and I refuse to ever have to stop for GI issues in a marathon ever again. I will not, like, that's not okay for me. Like, I won't do that. So now the plan is to take the next couple months to really heal the gut, learn how to fuel right, you know, get really super strong, and then train my heart out for Boston come January.
Gotcha. Wow. I mean, there's so many places I could go, but the 3-hour goal strikes me.
Yeah.
not because, I mean, it's an audacious number to me, and it's kind of one of those numbers that to me I'm like, yeah, I'll probably never get there. But then I think about it and I start doing the math, and it's like, you know, you've got a 5:30 marathon under your belt. So do I. So maybe I'm selling myself short to think that, you know, 3 hours is an impossibility for me or way overshooting. So, you know, kind of like I mentioned in the intro too, I'd love to know, like, has it just been the consistency over time that you think has gotten you from, you know, I guess what, if I'm remembering correctly from your blog, like a 5:20 something was the first marathon, and then, mm-hmm. you know, down to 3:11 at this point. Is there something fancier to it than just, you know, you've been running for 15 years? Is that what it takes?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so the first, I think like 8 marathons I ran were all between 5:25, 5:30. I guess the first one was like 5:20 something. But the second one was 4:35, right? Mm. So my first marathon, I think I was probably trained for, you know, maybe closer to like 4:45 or 5. Mm-hmm. But I ran it with a dear friend of mine, and she had IT band issues, and I wasn't leaving her side, and we walked a lot of that marathon. And so my second one, I did at Marine Corps, and I actually did that with a group in DC that was raising funds for the Whitman Walker Clinic. They did the Galloway program. Mm-hmm. So I walk ran that and ran, you know, did a 4:35 there. Anyway, I just, from there, like those first like several marathons, I didn't really know what I was doing. I wouldn't really eat much when I ran because it always made my stomach upset, even way back then. And I didn't, you know, back then, oh my gosh, like my first marathon I ran in 2000. So things have changed. But there weren't a lot of things on the market for fueling. So, you know, but I just kind of ran the same pace for everything. Like, I think my pace for the marathon was my same pace for the 5K practically. Like, I just didn't know anything. Right. So I wound up going through the RRCA coaching certification class. It's like a weekend long class. And, at that, I learned so much. Like, I was like, whoa, like I am doing this all wrong. I can't wait to implement all these things. I didn't go to it thinking that I would actually be a coach. I wanted to just learn how to improve my own running. This was something I loved so much, but I hated also how it made me feel sometimes. Like, I remember calling my husband after the Chicago Marathon the first time I ran it, which I think was like in maybe 2003. And I was like, please don't ever let me do this again. This is so stupid. I don't know why I do this to myself. I loved the training, but like every time I got to the race, I was overtrained. Like, I felt like, ugh, I needed a long break after everyone. So when I went through the coaching, I learned about, you know, things like speed work and nutrition and how to recover and, you know, that kind of stuff. And so I wound up, after I had my third baby, who was a complete surprise, I was like, you know, I really think if I can train right, I'm capable of a 4-hour marathon. I was a 4:35 marathoner at the time. And so I just started implementing, I'd never done speed work before. So I started to do that. I started to really honor the idea of recovery and rest days. I started to tweak and fiddle. I mean, even though I still was up in, you know, until very recently was having a lot of GI issues, I still was improving with them, you know? And so I think those things really helped. And I was just careful about, you know, after when that first training cycle, when I believed I could run a 4-hour marathon, I actually ran a 3:46. And so it was one training cycle where I brought it from that 4:35 down to a 3:46. I missed my BQ by about 2 minutes. I really had like done some things and thrown some things into my training equation that I'd never done before. So I really think that's why I had such a huge jump, you know, factors of training that like generate benefits. I did a lot of them all in one training cycle safely. I didn't really increase my weekly mileage at all. It was just training differently as opposed to like always pounding out the same thing every time. From there, every single training cycle over the course of a few years, I made little tweaks. Like I would experiment with maybe one or two things each cycle. So like I would, one cycle I would be, okay, maybe I can tolerate higher mileage. So when I ran my 3:46, I think my peak mileage was in the low to mid 40s. The next training cycle, I peaked closer to 60 miles and I brought my PR down to a 3:34 and got my first BQ. And then the next training cycle, I brought it up a little bit more to like right around 75 miles. And I brought my marathon time down to like I think it was like a 3:25 that training cycle. From there, I climbed my mileage up slightly more, but not very much. And then I started adding on, like I was doing one speed day a week. And then I started to add on a second day of like maybe a tempo run or something less invasive, maybe like speed play one day. But I still always demanded one rest day of myself. And I made sure I was recovering. And like I never, if I ever felt anything like kind of niggling, I backed it off. The training cycle that I ran, my first Boston, that training cycle, I went up to like 100-mile week. Wow. And I was okay. So, you know, but then when I ran my 3:11, I only peaked at like 80 miles a week and I was doing more speed work. So, because I don't think my body could have handled, I mean, I guess I'm speculating, but I don't think that I could have handled that high mileage and the extra intensity. So I think the key for me really has been like, I keep a training log. I love the Believe I Am training journal. I'm very like dedicated to writing in that. And I pay attention to like what I'm feeling and what's going on, you know, and just kind of always like assess where I am and then make certain like needed adaptations, you know, based on what I'm faced with. So now like the whole 3-hour thing, I mean, I believe it's possible because when I ran my 3:11 at Boston, I was really trained. Like I had just run a 1:26 half, which I had a 90-second stop at. You know, it is what it is. The fitness was probably closer to like, you know, in the high 2s to 3-hour marathon, the fitness, but it doesn't matter how fit I am or any of us are if we aren't healthy, if we can't handle what we're trying to do.
Right.
And so I believe that that's part of why I just care so much about doing it right is that, you know, like I really believe that with the proper attention to my health, I know I'm a motivated person. I know I'm strong. I know I'm dedicated. I know I can put the training in. So I just like really, I want to have that kind of race. I want to have the cycle and the experience with running where it all, like, I feel like truly in my heart, I'm doing it all right. I know when I ran my 126 half and my 311 marathon, like, there were things I was not doing right. I wouldn't have had that kind of issue with my GI stuff if I was, you know, really taking care of my body. So, you know, that's where that goal comes from. It's not some like pie in the sky, like, oh, 3 hour. I just think like, you know, that it's there. I just have to make some hard choices and some patient choices in order to get there.
Right.
You know?
Right. No, I definitely. And one thing that stood out to me in that is your stressing of the word belief and believe and how that you believe that it really is possible. How much, I have to imagine that it's a lot, but I'm still going to ask, how much do you attribute the jump to, you know, in your time and your performance to that solid belief factor, that the mental muscle, if you will?
Oh, it's humongous. It's giant. I mean, without that, I don't think I would have even tried. I remember, like, I don't know why I was doing this, but I think it was years and years ago. I remember going on to the Boston Marathon website. I was at my in-laws' house. Like, I can remember exactly where I was. And I looked at the qualifying times. And I remember, like, literally saying to myself, well, if I don't slow down, by the time I'm, like, 60, I can qualify for that.
See, that's exactly what I'm saying to myself. It's like, I got to get a little bit faster and a little bit older, and somewhere I'll meet in the middle.
Yeah, I remember thinking that. And when I started to, that was before I had, you know, gotten my coaching certification and realized, like, wait, Jess, like, you're doing so many things, like, not right, that maybe if you made these little, I mean, it's science, right? Like, it's science. I'm a human being. So why, like, there's not, like, why would I be any different from another human being that can do that? We are people. We are capable of amazing things, you know. And not only, like, you know, does faith come into play and belief and, like, you know, really, like, giving yourself that internal boost, but, like, look at the science. Like, I had to kind of, like, look at the facts and be like, well, look at science. Like, be smart. You're human. You can do this. And so I just started to, like, you know, tell my, like, kind of have that kind of conversation with myself in the beginning. I'm like, well, how do you know if you don't try and apply this? Like, people are telling you, they've done scientific research, you know, like, what would make you any different, you know? And so I just, like, I think that giving myself that chance based on seeing that information, like, I'm like, okay, well, why be a doubter? Like, I've always kind of, that's just been my nature. My attitude has been, okay, well, I'm going to be like a glass half full person. I want to find a way, that whole, where there's a will, there's a way. Like, I believe in that. So, you know, when I run into something hard, like, I don't want to be foolish about it, but, like, it doesn't have to necessarily define my experience. Even, you know, with the doubts that you have, like, that isn't, you don't have to engage with it. Like, allow it to happen. It's there. It's part of, like, your experience. You're going to have doubts, but, like, do you need to engage and, like, go there? Not necessarily, you know? And so that, I think, like, training is practice at, you know, overcoming that kind of stuff, and makes me, I think, just in general, a more positive person in life, and carries through, you know?
Right. No, I definitely can agree to, the lessons that you learn from running that translate into so many other areas of life, that it's, you know, it is a great teacher. Another thing that you were talking about, that kind of sprung into my mind is, you know, some of the mileage, the high mileage weeks that you had in the different training cycles that you were, you know, experiencing along the way, and, you know, 70 miles, 80 miles, 100 miles at one point. You know, the question on my mind, and probably on a lot of people's mind, is how do you find time to do that and then still do, you know, still be a mom, still, take care of the, you know, do the the cross training, maintain your rest day, which I certainly believe is important, but like where does the balance for everything else come in, or how do you find some balance in all that training cycle?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know, like I don't know, given that I wanted to experience and see what would happen with that. But I don't know that it was necessarily like, I still have my best racing season on less mileage than the highest I've ever gone. So I want to put that caveat there. But I will say that with regards to like logistics, is I would do a couple days a week on those peak mileage weeks. Okay. Like, which is maybe 1 or 2 weeks of a training
That's
cycle.
That's not 16
it's
weeks
like,
straight.
This is not what you do, right? But I always went, I always was careful to increase my mileage by no more than the number of days in that week that I was running. So if I run 6 days a week, my mileage never went up by more than 6 miles in a week. And then when at the peak of that, I would have maybe 2 double days. So maybe even just one. Like I would run, my first run was always like super duper early in the morning, like 5:30 in the morning, get home by 7. So I would do that run. And then my second run of the day, at the time I was leading a run club for Lululemon and teaching a Pilates class once a week in the evening. And so that was always a great opportunity to get some more miles in for my second run. So I would do that with, you know, as part of my job, basically. Mm-hmm. So logistically, that was like fairly easy to fit in. Or I would push my son in the stroller, again, like at a recovery pace, you know, for that second run. He would just come with me. So, and then on the weekend is where I'd get a lot of high mileage. So when I did my highest, I was also training for my 50 miler as part of my, Boston training cycle. So I did a long run on Saturday morning, and I was also coaching for a local running store. So I would go with the running group. And if I had more miles to run, I would just do it prior to coaching. So I'd get out on the trail and then get back on the trail with everybody, and do my long run on Saturday. And then on Sunday, I just did a recovery run. But it was like a long recovery run. It would be like, you know, 10 to 12, maybe even 14 miles of recovery running out on the trails, to try to get myself ready for that. It was a trail race, the 50 miler. So I kind of like use that as, you know, an opportunity to run slower, to get the time on my feet, and that helped me get ready for 50 miles. So, you know, I mean, it was a lot. Running consumed my life, and I don't necessarily think that it's something that I want to like get back to, like that high mileage. I don't know that it was the best balance thing for someone like me. I'm not an elite athlete, you know, and I don't think it's necessary to get, you know, your best. There's always a point where, you know, going high mileage isn't going to work for someone. So what's high, and it's all relative, you know, like I remember when I was trying to increase from the mid 40s up to like closer to 60 miles for my peak week. Like, am I going to be able to do this? Right. Like, I don't know. I know some people who like, they start falling apart at that point. And so, you know, I just wasn't sure what my body could do. I do think like, and I played soccer growing up and I was a center midfielder. I could just run all day. Like, I think I have a lot more slow twitch muscle fibers. and I'm not like, you know, I just running long and slow feels really good to me. So I had a feeling maybe my body could handle that. And it could. So I don't know. I think my advice there would just be, you know, to tiptoe into it. You know, it's not all about more. You know, quality is where it's at, in my opinion. If you can handle that type of high mileage, maybe you can, you know, get more further with your training. But like I said, my best marathon was not correlating with my highest mileage. So I don't know.
I don't know. I think the quality over quantity argument is valid. And also, I mean, sometimes you just have to be honest with the assessment of where you are in your life right now. Like if you have a job mm-hmm. that doesn't allow it, if you have kids that, you know, like
totally
let your kids grow up enough where they can entertain themselves for a couple hours, you know, like whatever you need to do, like sometimes you just have to be patient, which can be the hardest thing for anybody. But certainly runners, I think, struggle with patience a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, but it does pay. It mm-hmm. pays to be patient. And, you know, especially for so many of us, I mean, I might argue every single person that I know who runs, running is just part of who you are. Mm-hmm. It's part of how you live. It helps you, you know, get through the hard stuff in your life. It helps you be reminded of appreciating the good stuff. I mean, it's a practice. I think of it like when I know people who are like, you know, really into yoga and they mm-hmm. talk about their practice. Sometimes I wish we talked about running that way, because it is, to me, like it's a practice. It's mm-hmm. part of how I live. And so it is not something I want to just do for a little while. I want this to be part of my life for my whole life. And so, you know, racing is really fun. I like testing my limits. I think it is fun. But if I'm going to like hang my hat on my, you know, defining myself as a runner based on my races, you know, I'm in trouble, because mm-hmm. I mean, I'm going to be 70 someday, God willing, right. and out there running. And if I'm going to be defining myself and my improvements and how I, you know, am doing by what times I see on my watch or on the clock when I cross a finish line, like I'm probably setting myself up for a lot mm-hmm. of disappointment. And that's like running is a source of joy. And, you know, it's something I want to have in my life for the long haul. It's longevity.
Right.
So like you gotta be smart and patient with yourself with that, because, you know, don't we all wanna like be that old lady or man who's running out there like happily with a big smile on their face and at age 90, like winning your age group because you're like the only one in it.
No, you don't put that disclaimer on there. You win your age group, period. Like that's it.
Yeah, totally. That's true. But I mean, you know, I just wish that conversation would be had more with everybody. Cause I think, you know, especially with social media and stuff, I think we see like what people are doing and like, oh, I'm going to like hammer out 12 miles on the treadmill before dawn and, you know, going after this PR. And like, we all celebrate that. That is awesome. Mm-hmm. But like, truly, like just make sure you're doing that, not at the sacrifice of your health. Like, I want to see stories about people that are like, yeah, I crushed it. And like, I'm so healthy and happy and my life feels good, you know?
Right. No, I completely agree. Completely agree. And as we're getting close to wrapping up, I have to address the ultra marathon topic, because if I don't, I'll have people that listen to the show coming through their earbuds to attack me for not bringing it up. Because every time I talk to an ultra runner, I have to ask what was the itch that had to be scratched to do that? Because for me, 26.2 and I am done. Like, that's it. Like, not 26.3, not 26.2
right,
and a half. Like, I am done. You know, why? And then to go 50 miles instead of 50K. Because if I'm going to get talked into it, it's going to be 50K and I'll be done. So what was it for you to do the ultra thing?
Truly, I mean, that itch is still out there because of my experience when I ran my first, and I've only done the one 50 miler. Mm-hmm. It sounds silly to say only with that,
right.
But, you know, it feels like a different sport to me. It is so fun. It is so beautiful. I thought of it as like a day in the woods, hiking fast with a bunch of friends. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, you know, it's beautiful going out on those trails. And like, to me, I did not race that. Okay. Right. Like I ran it and like I walked up every hill. You know, it was just really fun. I felt like I was like frolicking in the woods, you know, with all these like super cool people. So to me, it was like just kind of amazing to think that like I could cover that much distance in a day. Mm-hmm. And it's like such a, I don't know, like you don't really do it alone. Like there are just so many people out there. Everybody is like testing their limits. And from all the volunteers and just all the runners out there, all the people supporting, like that course I did like looped around a couple times. And so, you know, it just feels like this great sense of community, and it's in nature. And I just think it's beautiful. So I don't know. I just love it. I love like just being outside like that. So mm-hmm. And it feels like an adventure, you know, like you're really exploring internally and externally at the same time. It's just nothing like road racing.
Yeah. You know, between you, me and the wall, I am a little bit worried that when I eventually do try it, which is probably coming up sooner than I want to admit, I might like it a lot too. So
you might like it. It's pretty fun. We'll it's see. Pretty fun. But I loved it.
You know, you're in prime trail running world. I'm in swampy, flat, ugly Florida. So I keep using that to hold against me too. Like, well, if I lived somewhere where there were cool trails, like I'd clearly run the trails more often, and I'd get sucked into the ultra world. But
you know what's cool though? Like I was listening to something, and I cannot remember which podcast it was. I'm becoming like such a podcast junkie because I love it. But I think it was some one of the ultra runners, a female that she like just, I think, won Western States maybe. And I can't even remember her name, but she was amazing. And she doesn't live in a place where she can run, you know, lots of difficult trails and things like that. But of course she like won that race. So obviously she was able to train well for it. But I think something that she said, and I could be wrong, but was like, this is a chance for you to like really explore the world, like pick some races and be, oh my God, like I'm going to go like explore Northern California or parts of Colorado or go to, you know, France or who knows, like there's just so many incredible places that you can like see the world. Like it's like adventurous and exciting. I think that people become almost like addicted to that. Like where am I going to go next? And like, you know, what is out there? You know, it's kind of cool to think about.
Well, and shoot. And just to see the beauty of the world. I mean, like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, I don't pretend to think for a second that you can capture what it looks like in a photo. And I've seen some photos that I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. Like I couldn't even wrap my head around what it must look like in person.
I know. I'm totally with you on that. That's like where I'm like, gosh, you know, I want to see more parts of the world, and what better way to see it than running.
Completely agree. So just as we're wrapping up, my last question, it's very open-ended. I've been closing for the last, I don't know, 50 or 60 episodes with, what I call a kind of a philosophical question. So, just, you know, very open-ended, very, you know, could be a short answer. Could be something that goes on for a few minutes, whatever, however the spirit moves you, if you will. But over the 15, 16 years that you've been at least running marathons and however long that you've been running before that, how would you say, or could you somehow, and it's maybe difficult, but somehow wrap your mind around the idea of, or the question of, how has running changed you as a person?
Whoa. Well, I mean, I guess the first thing that comes to my mind is that it has inspired me to believe in myself, like to not put limits on what I'm capable of. It's opened me up to possibility inside myself way beyond just running. And it's very symbolic to me in that way. So I don't know. I guess.
No, that's.
Yeah, that's what I'd have to say.
Like I said, it's open-ended, and sometimes they're short and sweet, and sometimes they you know, you have to talk them out a little bit. But that's, I think that's perfect. You know, who knows what you're capable of, and you just got to keep pushing it, and you find out, and then you're sometimes amazed that you're capable of more. You know, it's a never-ending cycle in a good way, as opposed to so many, you know, downward never-ending type of circles or cycles. Like this is a great one to just keep pushing and keep examining what the limits are. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. All right, guys, paceofme.com is the website, all over social media at paceofme. And I'll have the links to all of the places to connect with Jessica and anything else that we talked about today at the show notes for this episode, which you can find at dizruns.com/311. So, Jessica, keep staying patient, keep working on fixing that gut health, and obviously all the best going forward, and definitely looking forward to staying in touch and seeing what the future holds for you, and go get that 3 hour, that sub 3 hour. You can do it. I believe
thank
in you too.
You.
So go get it. And thanks for the time today.
Thank you.
All right, guys, thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope you enjoyed the conversation between Jessica and myself. And as always, I would love to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was something that we talked about that struck a chord with you? For me, I think one of the things that really was a great analogy, a great way of looking at the situation that Jessica's kind of found herself in, is the idea of the bow and arrow that she talked about, where you kind of have to pull back a little bit sometimes. You have to maybe go a couple steps back to really propel yourself forward. And, you know, as humans, and certainly as runners, but I think maybe as humans in general, we struggle with this idea of taking a step back and keeping the long picture in mind. You know, as runners, we're always training for the next race, or for what can we do to get faster this season? You know, whether it's speed work or whether it's building our base or whatever, what can we do right now to make us better? And sometimes that thing that we can do, or that we should do, that would be best thing to do, is to step back. You know, for Jessica, that's obviously healing her gut, healing herself from the inside to make herself stronger and faster is the goal. You know, that can be taking some time off to allow old nagging injuries to heal. That can be something like giving up a run or two per week to add some yoga, to add some strength training, to do something cross-training wise that maybe will help you to not wear down, but build your overall fitness better, become more of an athlete, which can make you a better runner. So, you know, there's so many things that we can do that on the surface might look like we're detracting from our running or taking a step back, but that arrow analogy is perfect. You know, we can take a step back now for the next, you know, weeks or several months or even a year sometimes. Shoot, you know, if your goal is like mine and like what Jessica talked about, running until we're in our 70s and beyond, what's a year? What's a year right now to really set yourself up for 20, 30, 40, 50 years of running? You know, take a step back, propel yourself forward. It's a beautiful analogy and something that I'm guilty of, and I'm sure maybe some of you might be guilty of as well, of not doing enough of that. Not always keeping that long-term perspective in mind. So that was my takeaway from this episode. I'd love to know what it was that stood out to you. Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. Or better yet, head to the show notes and leave a comment, DizRuns.com/311. And that way other people can see it and add to it and kind of learn and glean from each other, you know, which is always optimal. So with that, I'll go ahead and wrap things up. Don't forget DizRuns.com/CMN. If you can give up a dollar to help my wife's cause, but ultimately to help, you know, kids that have to deal with being in the hospital setting, and Children's Miracle Network is a great organization. And on that page, if you head over to dizruns.com/CMN, you can find out all of the information. It takes you right to Rebecca's page where, you know, there's links to Children's Miracle Network and the work that they do. And you can read more about the organization and what their stewardship is with the money. They're pretty good. They're pretty good. So, if you can spare a dollar, that would be awesome. And yeah. So thanks, guys. Oh, and she doesn't listen to the show either, so she won't know. in case you're curious, when I said earlier that this is unbeknownst to her, she doesn't ever listen to the show. So this will be a complete out of left field for her, which is really cool and kind of what I'm hoping for. So if you can do that, if you can spare that dollar, it's much appreciated. But anyway, I'm gonna stop rambling here as we're getting closer and closer to an hour. Try to keep this thing under an hour, if at all possible. So thanks for listening, guys. Appreciate you. You know, if there's ever anything I can do for you, please don't hesitate to reach out, ask a question, let me know. Find me on Twitter, find me on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you want to be. You can always find me and let me know how I can help you. But thank you for listening. Appreciate you guys, and have a great rest of the day. And I look forward to talking to you again real soon. Take care, guys.